P&G positions the detergents as a superior grease remover with advertising copy featuring well-known comedian conducting a doorstep challenge with his bottle of joy. We have all these different in TV, television, we see a lot of ads wherein some celebrity comes and he endorses it. That's what we're talking about in this case. Most surprising was the new product's price. Laflin dispensed with the usual low introductory price and price joy concentrate above the two leading brands and on the theory that a premium price signaled a premium product. Laflin did not offer a line of different sizes and fragrances. Instead, he introduced a single item, a marketing strategy. Right? Now, taking it further, though this robbed consumers of their choice, the single size, single fragrance focused consumer attention and allowed retailers to sell large volumes with relatively little shelf space. You see, what happens is in a market, you have a product, and today we come across detergents, liquid soaps, they're having different fragrances. It does confuse the person, the consumer, and the consumer gets a little defocused. So he's not able to make out what to buy. And in the bargain, this broad offering usually cuts into the sales and the profits of the company who are offering this. Now, the thought process behind this was offer a product which is unique, which is seen as a premium product, and offer only one fragrance and one size so that it is unique and it is recognizable by the consumers who come to buy that, right? Competitors should have aggressively fought with their established regular strength lineup heavily. Instead, both the competitors, the Japanese competitors who were in the front, appeared to panic, quickly bringing a concentrate to the market and promoting it heavily. This is a also ran. This is a imitation which people do. You have carefully thought out a compact packaging. You have done it. It has succeeded. So it's an originality of yours and your own mastery. Somebody else looks at only the success part of it and he says, since that compact detergent powder is selling very well, let's also do the same thing. This is what both these competitors did in Japan. And what happened? They failed. In reality, both competitors were promoting P&G idea of concentrated product. Whose idea was it? It was Laflin's idea. And these people, they said that if we had to win, they were looking only at the winning part of it. They were not looking at the processes that led to the winning. Right? And this is what many of the short-sighted competitors do. Right? Laflin admitted in an audacious gambit. He was pretty confident, rather a little overconfident, very audacious. A crapshoot, he said his gambit, whatever he did was a crapshoot, because if both had been smarter, they had picked the right defense, they could have stopped us. What he essentially is telling us, Laflin, is that these two competitors did not recognize their own strengths. They had not done their homework. They had not thought original and they had not gone into mastery. Had they really paused, had they done something, they would have really outshone P&G. They would have actually brought down P&G back to number 3 or number 4. But they did not do it. They panicked. Right? And as a result, Joy achieved a leading market share in the category. The position it has defended ever since that time. Right? Laflin's approach to decision making always takes advantages of mastery, whether his own or other experts, but mastery is in no way diminishes his commitment to originality. After his promotion to the position of the CEO in 2000, he dramatically expanded P&G's participation in the beauty care business by the $53 billion purchase of Gillette, the biggest acquisition in the history of P&G. Laflin's lessons about experiences tells us these three things. Stands and tools influence experience. Experiences in turn influence tools and stands. Both of them are interrelated. Experiences can deepen mastery and nurture originality. This is a learning. The more and more experience I have, the more and more it deepens mastery and originality. And those that combine to deepen mastery and nurture originality are the most powerful in enhancing integrative thinking. It's a learning from whatever we have discussed so far. Now we are discussing the various learnings. Okay. So in this slide, we're talking about lesson number one, stands and tools influence experience. Normally, we have inclination to accumulate experiences that reinforce the stands and the tools we start with. So whatever is my stands, whatever is the way I look at the world and at myself, based on that, I use certain thinking process and action tools and I get some experiences. In most cases, this remains constant. People don't change the stance of the tools. They get settled down. When they get settled down, then they stagnate. Not much happens. 3 or 4 years or 5 years down the line, they may get promoted. Now, promotion in an organization is not about mastery and originality. No, it need not be. You are very good in doing what you're doing. You're getting the business done. That's it. It need not be that you've got a mastery or originality. Stance guides the acquisition of tools, and tools guides the type of experiences we have. People who believe that existing models are identical to reality and fear opposing models aren't likely to believe that better models exist. This is taken from the earlier chapters. Three views about myself and three views about my relation with the world outside. Six of them, right? Normally, they will be impatient to choose available model, whatever be its shortcomings. They don't wait for the perfect model to be emerging. They'll start doing something, okay? Regarding stance and tools influence experience further, normally we would use only inductive and deductive reasoning, would build highly simplified models, would advocate our own point of view rather than dispassionately considering multiple points of view, would tend to reinforce our initial stance through the experiences we gather, and feel we have all the tools we need. This is how a thinker will actually think, conventional thinker. In stark contrast, what happens with the integrative thinker? Laffey believed existing models are just the best anyone has come up with to date and relish opposing models. There are better things happening, better models are there, he will start. He says, I look for in that direction also. I can't be content with the fact that the existing model is the best. He waited for the better model to be found and was certain he will find it by wading through the complexity and staying patient. We have discussed it in the earlier chapters. He used generative reasoning, causal modeling, and assertive inquiry. In stark contrast, what happens to people as far as their stance and tools are influencing the experience is concerned, as far as integrative managers are concerned? Experience which people like Laffey gain building new models would reinforce their initial stance and the skill and would increase sensitivity with which they would deploy integrative thinking tools. Laffey's experiences, this is lesson number two. Experiences in turn influence tools and stance. Experiences in turn influence tools and stance. So having got an experience, I must work backwards and ask myself a question. Where have I gone right? Where have I gone wrong? Whatever I've gone right, again, I need to question that. So people rarely do that. By an experience is meant some actions you're taking and an outcome coming. When the necessary outcome has come, or even better than that, in terms of tangible results, people normally get content. They don't go and test back the tools and the stance. Laffey's experiences taught him both that he liked business and that he needed more tools to guide him. That motivated him to head to Harvard Business School, where valuable additions to his toolkit worked as a subtle but significant change in his identity. He saw himself as a graduation as a young executive with years of experience and a set of tools to apply in the business world. The feedback loop from experiences to tools happened during his time as president of P&G's Asia Pacific region. In Japan, he observed how the best Japanese firms typically had an obsessive concern for the design of consumer experience. We talked about the rail car, Tim Brown and all, wherein the experience, it's a designing of a full experience of traveling in a rail car, right? So in Japan, he had observed that they were leaving a lot of emphasis on designing. From the product itself to its packaging, experiences of shopping for it in the store. He learned that design could be a competitive advantage for P&G and created a post of Vice President Design in P&G, established an external design advisory board and developed close relation with IDEO, the leading design firm, the company that actually we discussed in one of the earlier chapters of how they designed the road, railroad experience through those various steps, right? Lesson number three, experiences can deepen mastery. Mastery requires repeated experiences in a particular domain. In the essentially infinite morass of data, that's so much of data. Morass meaning it's got data which is unnecessary, data which is duplicated, data that is not really useful. That's the morass of data. We have too much of them today. So in an essentially infinite morass of data, they can pull out the few salient data points that make a difference and mentally map their causal relationships. These people have got the skills. And because they have done it many times before, they know from their experiences how to structure the problem in order to create a resolution. We are using all the terms which are coming in the second chapter, all the 4 points: salience, causality, architecture, and then resolution. Right? Now, taking it further, a masterful doctor may be able to diagnose appendicitis after a brief examination of the patient without working through dozens of options. From their vast data bank of experiences, masters develop pattern recognition skills. This is a very important thing to be underlined. Pattern recognition skills that open up shortcuts to solutions. In fact, many of us do it in behavior. We see some pattern of behavior of people and we start predicting that this person will behave like this in this situation. Pattern recognition is a very good tool which one needs to understand of anything, consumer goods being consumed by people, pattern of behavior. And pattern is studied over a period of time. Once the pattern is there, the pattern emerges, I would be able to use the pattern very creatively to design the future. So pattern recognition is something which is very, very important, and people have this data bank of experiences behind them, and from there they enter into understanding the pattern. Now here is where the mastery is slowly emerging and also the originality will come. Mastery comes only through planned and structured repetition, underlined repetition of consistent type of experience. But to become masterful, it is necessary to have a plan and structure for observing and reflecting on each act. See, one cannot really become a master unless one goes through a systematic, procedural, structured approach. It is against the grain of being original and creative. Creativity is something that just is spontaneous. It doesn't have any rules. It doesn't have a structure. Whereas mastery requires a structure. But people, when they get stuck up in a structure, they lose their creativity. So being in the structure, gaining mastery is important, and the structure hence is very important, right? Through a conscious campaign of repeated structure and planned experiences, Lafley, over the course of his career, has become a past master of creating, branding, and selling consumer products. Lesson number 3B, experiences can nurture originality. Some contexts do not reward the repetition, structuring, and planning that are the hallmarks of mastery. Those non-standard contexts require the creation of a new approach or solution that is originality. It simply means there are some events that happen in the industry, there are some events that happen in the world which are not the routine normal incidents, events. When it is not it's a non-routine type of an incident or a non-routine event, the routine thinking and action may not work there. So it is at that time, it separates the men from the boys in terms of the non-original thinkers who have already got a mastery but who do not have an originality at that point of time, versus the people who have a mastery and also are able to think original by detaching themselves from the factory setting thinking. Right? Every day, the production is going on in the factory. Routine. And day after day, the production engineer is getting familiar with what needs to be done. He is into the nitty-gritty of the production processes and he masters it. He is very good in that. So it becomes predictably for him that this is going to be happening. His real test is seen on a day when things suddenly go haywire. The raw material has not come in, or it has come in parts, and there's a pressure on the production to come out because the market is waiting for me and I'm the production engineer. So on that day, it will be a test of how well I'm using this without getting into panic. So if I'm an original thinker, I'll say, fine, let's do something about it. Let's take some contingency action and we'll see that the show goes on. Many people take a action under contingency, but most of the actions, practically 90% of the action, are not coming from an originality. Now these people have a particular uncanny ability, an inbuilt type of a property quality through which they are able to think original when there is a one-off situation. when the situation is a non-routine situation. So suffice it to say, friends, when the routine is going on, they are into the mastery. They also apply their originality, but their originality actually comes out highest when there's a non-routine thing. That is where a leader is required. A good leader is required at a time when something non-routine, something out of the blue comes and hits the company, right? So that is called as a non-standard context, okay? Originality demands a willingness to experiment, spontaneity in response to a novel situation, and openness to trying something different than perhaps first planned or intended. It is important to become comfortable with the process of trial and error and iterative prototyping, or else one would be tempted to focus on least risky option in place of originality. Many managers have seen, they are always, when there's a panic situation, they take the path of least resistance. Nothing wrong about it, but then they don't grow. There'll be one manager among 100 perhaps, or maybe 1,000, who'll say, let's do this, because he's sure about himself. He's got an original thinking which is backed up with his mastery. I mean, one of the invitations I would like to give all of you is, please, the more and more years of mastery you gain on some part of your life, learn to start delving into your originality also. Because when you start seeing things with a rich experience of mastery and originality, it's a different flavor altogether. One has to do it to experience what I'm talking, right? And it is important to become comfortable with the process of trial and error and iterative prototyping, or else one would be tempted to focus on least risky option in place of originality. Laffley made conscious efforts to nurture originality. At the Navy Exchange, he had spontaneity, despite being an inexperienced naval officer, to exploit the opportunity when he heard of the oil price increase. Later, he spent endless hours in interpreting voluntaries and launched compact detergent. Second milestone. Boldly experimented with Joy dish liquid in Japan, and he had to engage in crapshoot to achieve his goals. When he took over as CEO in 2000, his confidence in his originality was great enough for him to adopt Connect and Develop initiative and acquire Gillette, a giant in the industry. His experiences with originality stretching from ceramic elephants gave him the courage and the confidence to take big risks in search of even bigger rewards. Now we come to lesson number 4, mastery combined with originality, the combination of these two things. Mastery and originality require each other to grow and are the result of the most powerful experiences. Laffley, with his wealth of experiences, can respond quickly when either mastery or originality are called for. I just mentioned some time back. When the routine is going on, mastery. When non-routine comes, originality comes into picture. It's a healthy combination of these two. There are times when I have to be into factory setting. But becoming a victim of factory setting is very dangerous when there's a non-routine situation. So how to sort of shift gears between these two is a skill. Is a skill, right? In fact, his ability to toggle, that's exactly what I said now, shifting the toggling rapidly between modes sometimes gives others the impression that he has multiple personalities. It could happen. People who are into routine would see you as a person who's a routine guy. On a non-routine day, you do a heroic act or maybe a foolish act in the eyes of others, and you're suddenly emerging with a new behavior. And this new behavior may be startling people. They'll say, what's the matter with this guy? This is what most of us are with. So one might feel that this guy is, something in him is different from what I'm seeing him every day. But that's required on the day. That's very much required on the day. You have to learn to rescue things out of crisis, and you can't afford to be thinking like a routine on that day. And some people do it very well, right? His decisions come from an expert data cruncher as well as from an intuition, both these combinations. Using experiences to drive a combination of mastery and originality is characteristic of integrative thinkers. Moses Neimer believed that carefully controlling and organizing CCTV spending was an important part of his job as CEO. It is a skill that he acquired through years of experience. At the same time, Neimer had been pioneer of what he called radical broadcasting, something very different, out of the box. Znaimer recognizes the need for the difficult combination of mastery and originality. Right? Similarly, educator Gary Mabin shows the ability to manage the tension between mastery and originality in running of the Mabin School, the innovative institution she founded in Toronto, Canada. Her deep expertise in childhood education and learning gave her a strong ability to predict development of each student based on the school's pedagogical approach. Usually we have a school, and in the school there is a syllabus, and the same syllabus all the students have to read. So, but we all know that each student has got different abilities and different personalities, different learning curves. So how to take a syllabus, how to make the pedagogy, the teaching methods through role plays, through games, through textbooks and all that, how to convert that, which is more of a broad base, into something specifically going to each child, was what Mabin did. Okay. This approach made liberal use of the surprise and spontaneity the students themselves created. Imagine a group of some 60 students in a class. There's a syllabus. At the same time, the syllabus is being made to be understood to each of the student in the way he or she understands. It appears to be quite an effort on the facilitator or the professor. But the fact is that when you connect and when you are really creative, a subject can be taken which has got a standard syllabus, and the same syllabus can be understood by practically all the students in the classroom. Now that's a skill which some people have, right? As Lafley, Mabin and Znaimer illustrate, great leaders utilize their experience to build and deepen their mastery while maintaining and expressing their originality. Average leaders do one or the other, either or, right? Watch out, warns M.A. Edmondson of Harvard Business School. Because our natural tendencies, the way we are hardwired, would lead us to favor mastery over originality, would lead us to keep going in the direction we are going and make some marginal improvement. In the process, we miss opportunities to make big difference. Others express their originality but do not develop their mastery. Mastery combined with originality, we are continuing. They are sought out as idea people but aren't trusted to run organizations of size and endurance because they can't or won't cultivate the multiple masteries that leadership of such entities demands. Mastery without originality becomes a rote, a routine, a cul-de-sac, which is, it's like a dead end of a road. But originality without mastery is flaky, if not entirely random. It's totally of no use. Somebody creative, a person is a very, very creative person, originality. But only that will not be used. Both of them need to combine and integrate, right? At its core, integrative thinking requires the integration of mastery and originality. And without mastery, there won't be a useful salience, causality, or architecture. And without mastery, there won't be any creative resolution. Both these things have been beautifully summed up here. Mastery is required for all the four steps of your integrative thinking. Salience, causality, architecture, and resolution, right? Without creative resolution, there won't be enhancement of the mastery. And when mastery stagnates, so does originality. Mastery is an enabling condition for originality, which in turn is a generative condition for mastery. It means what? Every time I have mastered something, I may tend to get stuck up, saying that it works, I'm successful, I'm good. So what is generative conditioning? Generative means I am actually trying to ask a question, what if this does not happen? What if that happens? What if this fails, which is already so successful? So I am actually putting myself into more and more of questioning my own actions and results, even if they are successful. So this is an important condition. These modes are interdependent, right? And now we come to what is called as a person knowledge as a system. It is hard to overemphasize how much standstones and experience reinforce each other. Each time you use generative reasoning, causal modeling, and assertive inquiry to construct a creative resolution, you deepen your understanding of the tools used to produce a constructive outcome and reinforce the belief that you are capable of forging creative resolutions. It actually builds up a lot of confidence and you feel yourself expanded, right? You also improve the odds that your next attempt at creative resolution will succeed as you bring greater levels of skill to the new task. What really happens in terms of behavior, in terms of emotion, is that you become bold. You don't get scared when changes happen. And why? Because you've already created a habit of being into multiple saliences and stances. When that part of a thing comes, you know, you say, fine, you're very hopeful. You don't allow the conditions to overcome you. You actually overcome the conditions. Right? Personal knowledge is a system. Success in turn will reinforce your optimistic stance and your confidence in your skills. Integrative thinkers continually gain experiences that deepen their mastery and make them more confident than they can handle complexity as they approach a creative resolution. For some, the positive spiral starts young. In the early days of Institute of One World Health, which we discussed in the earlier, one of the earlier chapters, Victoria Hale got to be known among her colleagues as Dr. Why Not. Who says this is the answer was her favorite question since her childhood. We talked about the positive spiral in one of the earlier chapters. Positive spiral is something in which I am generating myself towards my inquiry and I'm making it going rapidly, going faster. Everything I keep on asking, it may sound irritating to people outside, but that's making me go further. The spiral is going up. And that's what Victoria Hale was doing from childhood. Repeated practice in the creative resolution of tensions reinforced her view that the existing models aren't the only ones. It motivated her to acquire tools that made the job of model creation easier and sharpened the sensibilities and skills she needed to find the creative resolution she sought. Right? None of us can go back to our childhood to practice creating a new model, new models in the face of existing ones, but we can benefit greatly by experiences going forward. We need to think about our own stance as we studied in the sixth session. I haven't done it so many years, you may say. Everybody is not Victoria Hale. So if the past is gone, can I start from today? Can I start questioning my stance? Could I go in for multiple saliences? Now this is how one has to think, right? We also need to record our predictions in the way that our actual outcome can be audited against expectations and learn from the experience. Every experience should become a feedback to you. And when the feedback comes to you, you have to learn from the feedback what to do and what not to do and make your correction. We have to ask what would have to be true for a particular model to be valid. To ensure that students and executives at Rotman's integrative thinking courses maximize the learning benefit of their experiences, they are taught to audit and record the logic of their own decisions and compare the results to the outcomes they predicted. For example, I'm predicting that, you know, after say 2 hours, some event is going to happen. And so I'm taking an action on that particular path. The event has happened either to what I predicted or beyond what I predicted. Both ways, I have to question and ask, how did this whole path work? Just because it has succeeded doesn't mean that my path is the only path. It succeeded now because of certain circumstances. So every outcome that which we arrive at after predicting and planning, we have to ask questions and take a feedback about the various processes. It's a very important part of the whole process, the whole thinking. If the results are consistent with their predictions, the validity of the tools and stance is reinforced, building confidence for the next decision cycle. If the results are inconsistent, they are not in line with what I predicted, class participants can ask themselves what changes in the tools used or guiding stance could have produced a better outcome. With a relatively small amount of practice, participants of Rotman's can become proficient in reverse engineering their decisions and auditing the results. Right? Integrative thinkers knowledge system is what we are discussing. It's very clear. It's a combination of a number of things we have discussed in the earlier chapters. Existing models, reality, leverage opposing models, better models exist. These three. Then the remaining three is I can find it. It's about me. This is about my view of the world. I can wade through complexity. I give myself time to create. These six are important stances to be taken. Generative reasoning, causal modeling, assertive inquiry is the tools which we use. And this is how it proceeds. Stance guides tools. Tools guide experience. Experience informs me what I need to do better to the tools. And the tools inform in turn to the stance what could be better. Right? So now we are consolidating the discussion by taking this personal knowledge system of the integrative thinker. The typical features of the integrative thinker's person or its system, her stance, tools and experiences are mapped graphically in the earlier slide. With this combination of stance, tools and experiences, integrative thinkers grow continually more proficient at generating creative resolutions. With your patience and reflection, this person knowledge system can help you. And with respect to patience, to be a truly inspired integrative thinker, you need a wealth of experiences to sharpen your sensitivities and skills. For most, it will take years to build, but by adopting the six attributes of stance, you can give time at a hand, as it were, by creating a structure that will help you develop the tools that you need and direct you towards experiences to build sensitivities and skills. Right? As for reflection, it speeds you along the path to integrative thinking by maximizing what you learn from each new experience. Our tendency is to think and do rather than think about how we think. We need to do that. It's obvious that highly successful manager leaders think differently than the great mass of their counterparts. Integrative thinking they employ is not a rocket science, it is sensible and practical thinking. Such thinking requires mastery and originality that can come only from experience. Reflection, which defeats the tendency to take obvious for granted, is what gives experience the value. If there's an experience and you reflect upon the experience, even if it's positive and it has produced results, it gives you a better value to the experience. And when you refuse to take your thinking for granted, you give yourself the best opportunity to enhance and utilize your opposable mind to its fullest. Work hard, think hard, and don't dawdle. That's a mantra. And now we come to the summary. Integrative thinkers accumulate experiences to build mastery. To make most of the opportunities before the integrative thinker, it is necessary to be spontaneous, flexible, open and willing to experiment and respond quickly to transient opportunities. Experiences hone originality. Integrative thinkers use both their mastery and originality in their decision-making process. With this combination of stance, tools and experiences, integrative thinkers grow continually more proficient at generating creative resolutions. And with this, friends, I conclude this session and conclude the 8th chapter, the concluding chapter of Integrative Manager. My request to all of you is, go through each of the chapters in a very detailed way. You can watch and stop and make your notes, and then you can actually learn how to put them into practice. If you have any questions or anything you would like to ask, do mail us, and it can be addressed to me, Professor Venkat Iyer, and I would be all too glad to respond to you by getting in touch with you through an email and maybe through a phone in case you put in your telephone number. Thank you very much, and happy journey through integrative thinking in action. All the best.